Okay, I know we are sitting between y'all and lunch, so we'll try and get this through. This agenda papers that we are covering in the session is agenda paper 4, 4A, B, and C. Now, which deal with providing you with the summary of the comment letters that you have received on the discussion paper, accounting for dynamic risk management. We are not asking for any decisions at the session, and this is the comment letter analysis. 4A gives you an overview of the comments received in all the sections of the DP. So the DP has 9 sections with 26 questions. So 4A summarizes the comments, the overall summary of the comments. What 4B does is that it goes into 5 of those sections and the comments received on each of those questions in more detail. Why we have selected those 5 sections? Because I think those knit together well. And the balance sections, we plan to bring the comment letter analysis back to you detailed in March. 4C is the user paper that deals with the feedback we have received from users. And actually, we have received some comment letters from users, and also a significant amount of outreach was done, along with quite a few of the board members. And that paper summarizes what we have heard from those sessions. Now, what we are planning to do is go through 4C first, user outreach results, and then come back to 4B if that's okay with you all, and that's how we want to present it. Most of the comments or the details you'll get in 4B overlaps with what's there in 4A, so if you have any other questions on 4A, happy to take that, but we are proposing we start with 4C, which is the user feedback. Yeah, if that's okay, then Yuji, if you could.
Let me explain the feedback from users of financial statements first. Users broadly supported the project. Their support is based on the view that existing accounting requirements, say IFRS 9 hedge accounting, that is based on one-to-one relationship between what is hedged and what is hedging, does not always adequately represent risk management when it is dynamic. They believe that as DRM, dynamic risk management, is an important function of entities such as banks, a better representation of DRM activities would provide useful information for their decision making. They also supported the concept of proposed approach, portfolio revaluation approach, PRA, because it allows users to analyze a bank's net interest income, NII, by the profit source or driver and the impact of the use of derivatives on NII. The PRA splits NII into customer margin and the results arising from the net open interest rate positions, thereby providing users with an understanding of its composition, drivers, and associated risks. This provides useful information because quality and sustainability of earnings arising from customer margin and those that result from taking net open risk positions are different. In addition, the idea to decompose the NII between before and after hedging using derivatives was considered to be useful by users. Even though they support the concept of the PRA, their views were mixed on how and where means profit or loss, OCI, or note disclosures, information on unhedged exposures on future NII is presented. This means there is no common shared view about the scope of the PRA among users. As for behavioralization, such as core demand deposits, users generally supported it because direct representation of DRM based on behavioralization is better than indirect representation through so-called proxy hedge accounting. However, I also have to mention that users have shown concerns about the PRA. Their concerns include, first, the lack of comparability if the application of the PRA is optional, and second, the degree of subjectivity in relation to behavioralization. They also commented on the possibility of earnings management. In that context, users repeatedly emphasized importance of adequate disclosures. Disclosure topics raised were, for instance, assumptions in relation to behavioralization, such as estimated duration and the amount outstanding of core demand deposits, and information that distinguishes derivatives by the purpose of use. Here, let me turn to the board for discussions. Thank you very much.
Sue?
In some of the meetings that I attended with users, I did find it reassuring, I guess is the word I'm looking for, that they agreed with us that there was information content and useful information in understanding the drivers behind the profitability of the banks in particular in terms of their interest rate risk management, the extent to which their profitability was coming from the amount they were charging for credit versus the amount that was from open interest rate risk positions. So I think that that was helpful. And in quite stark contrast to what the objectives of preparers were that we'll see in when we get to 4B.
Thank you. I just want to confirm users' view. As you said, net open interest rate risk position would be more clear with our proposal. That makes the user happier. But instead, our proposal could create more volatility on the profit or loss. So, during the outreach, just I would like to listen to your impression. Do users prefer more volatility on profit or loss if they can get the information about net open interest rate risk clear? So are users happy with such a situation?
Honestly, I think that their views are mixed. Okay.
Right.
Some users, as you mentioned, as long as the volatility in profit or loss reflects economic reality, that should be shown as the volatility in profit or loss. But other users also said, even if it reflects economic reality to some extent, it is too noisy for their financial statement analysis. At the same time, in addition, if you want to show the effect of taking net open risk position in profit or loss volatility, you have to inevitably include the effect of behavioralization. However, the effect of behavioralization includes subjectivity to some extent. Some of the users are worried whether they can really trust the volatility. So their views are mixed.
Mary?
I thought it was very helpful that you prepared a separate paper that pulled out the user feedback, because not only the point for the reason Sue raised, but also for me, it highlighted some differences that wouldn't come out if it were just a generic, whether it's some or X percent said this and some said that. And it, to me, it poses a couple of very difficult hurdles that I think should probably be things we try to think about first in terms of what, you know, how and if so, whether we can move forward with this project. One of which is major concern about the subjectivity, and that's particularly in the behavioralization. If it's something that is estimated by the entity based on its own experience, how do you tell when its estimates changing versus estimated actual proved differently, and therefore how, I'm thinking of conceptual framework project and trying to think about what the right word is, and I'm going to fail my exam, reliable, I think, the in terms of not having wide measurement uncertainty, how reliable is the remeasurement of one aspect. And I think that that's something we should not downplay, because the whole PRA is predicated on an assumption that, you know, that can be distinguished. That was one thing. And then a couple of others are more classic, that I think we see a real conflict between the user perspective and the preparer perspective on what is the purpose of this. Sue highlighted the user perspective of interested in seeing those margins differently, and I got a message that the preparer perspective was more, this should be directed at addressing accounting mismatch and figuring out which of those is the driver, rather than sometimes it's a little of this and sometimes a little of that. We have to figure out. And then the other one, just on the scope, whether it's mandatory, all, optional, hedged, seem to be the things. The last comment, and I think it's probably more on 4B than 4C, is that it's great that we had feedback from insurers on this, but the feedback from insurers seems so linked to the insurance project, and maybe just trying to look at some of the issues we've been discussing through a different lens, that I think it would be helpful to segregate those in the same way that you've done in future, because I think it could complicate consideration. It's not that I think this should be banks only, but I think some of the insurer issues that were raised in this consultation go beyond dynamic risk management.
I'm out of
thanks. Likewise, I'm very pleased with the papers. I think they are very thorough and provide a snapshot of the challenge that we have ahead of us. And particularly with this one on users, focus on paragraphs 9 and 10. I think they capture well three of the main challenges that we have ahead with such a project. I think 10A, the being optional, is already a fashion in hedge accounting models, so it's a consistent. Yeah, consistent concern showed by users, but the other two are really troublesome. The departure of conceptual framework. So how are we going to tackle this? And of course, we should bear in mind the project that we are developing. And the third issue, the C, the curious of revaluation, because here I think. And this is more leading me to my question. Of course, they are concentrating in the model that we use as the example used in the discussion paper, and that interest rate. But do we heard from these users, or were these users specialized in banking, or do we heard from users that are not familiar with the banking business or other aspects associated with non-financials? I think this is important as well, because we use this as a example to facilitate our discussions. And being no common view, I think that was something that I was expected. And during the project, we, at least to UG, I asked this about provided this information already. And you mentioned that in Japan, it's, if I'm not wrong, some of them generally provide us during the press release or during the presentation to investors and analysts in general, how they manage holistically the risks associated with their business.
Just to come back on the composition of that team, and I agree, Amado, that's important, because if you're used to financial services, it gives you the level of comfort which they used to. I think it was a mix. We tried to target, along with the investor team, users or analysts who were looking or analyzing banks' financial statements, because it's easier they would. And I would say also, at certain points, we were able to get to some pretty specialized credit analysts who understand this very well. So, but that was not general. So when we were talking to user groups, there was a mix of other things in there. But from the meetings that I've attended, we have tried to get the feedback from people who are used to financial institutions. So they understood when we were talking about whether the valuation issue was coming out was core demand deposits. So how do you model those, which is coming from the regulators as well. Also, they understood the benefit of trying to see that how much of the funding that a bank has from core demand deposits, or almost which is the free funding source, and how they're using it. So it was a mix, but we did get some specialized comments as well from the user side.
Sure.
I just wanted to come back on some of the reliability points which Mary touched on, because it did come through very much in the user feedback. And I think that that's, firstly, I think if we're going to do anything in this space, it's something we're going to have to face, because I think the very clear message that we got was that if we're going to be at all aligned with risk management, we're going to have to take into account behaviourisation. I think also for the banks to have a model which will work for them, no matter what their perspective is in terms of scope, they really need core demand deposits to be included within the model, which brings us straight into behaviourisation. So if we want to do something in the space, that whole reliability issue I think is unavoidable, whether we're doing a broad scope or even a narrow scope, because even if you're sort of mirroring the derivatives, which some want us to do, we have to be comfortable that the offsetting effect is really reflected in what's being risk managed at some level. Yeah. So I think it's something we can't get away from. I think, though, that we need to also be a little bit calm about it and not panic about the reliability too much, in the sense that I'm not sure that we're that far along the spectrum in a different space from what we've just signed off on in terms of expected credit losses for banks, management's expectations of forward-looking expectations of credit losses, or insurance, where we're asking people to measure their expected cash flows in the future. So it sounds scary to us, behaviourisation, but I think it's something that's not that far from where we've had to get comfortable in other spaces. And if we really want to be aligned with risk management, I just think it's unavoidable.
Yes, sure. To build on what Sue has been saying, everywhere, when that's one message that's consistent from regulators, from users, from preparers, everywhere, we need to look at behavioralization, because that's the whole essence of risk management. I'll give you an example. When we look at any kind of risk management of open portfolios, if you take out this idea of behavioralization, for a bank, it's all open. They don't have any coverage on that. Not all, maybe an extreme, but most large part of their banking book would be open. So to emphasize, and we will go through that, we are not asking for decisions, but without addressing core demand deposits, I don't think we'll be able to address any of the challenges that are coming up in the which the project was set up to do. But yes, there are also concerns which Mary have addressed, like how do you do this? What are the safeguards? And that's something that we will have to address as we go through the discussions.
So just following the Amaro's question and Sue's, so users, I think they're earnings management risk. So this is kind of a main key driver of earnings management and behavioralization.
One of the concerns, Chengwu, was earnings management. They're also saying that how reliable will these measures be for it to go through P&L.
Yeah, I'm just talking about the P.
Yeah, accuracy of the revaluation, given that it is correlated with other risks such as credit. So remember, when we are looking at it, it is revaluation by risk. We are not looking at full fair value. So they're saying that how accurate it will be, what are the methodology that will be there. Again, let me emphasize, this methodology is no different from what we apply for fair value hedges for interest rate risk today, when you're allowing a component to be the hedged item. So it's the scale I think people are more concerned about, rather than the methodology.
But, you know, Sue mentioned the expected loss model. I think we took this decision consciously, but we know there is a pretty big risk of earnings management there. There can be no doubt about it.
Can I add one thing?
Yes.
Okay. When we explain the idea of core demand deposits to the users of financial statements, the typical response from them is it is not including too much subjectivity. That, for instance, the expected duration or maturity of core demand deposits might be 3 years or 5 years, or in extreme case might be 10 years. So they understand that problem. However, when we explain the question, ask the question, which is better, direct reflect presentation of core demand deposits or indirect representation using, say, proxy hedging, their impression would be slightly changed. And when I also ask the question that the current view under existing IFRS, namely that the duration, say, maturity or core demand deposits must be overnight, Some of them tell us that might also be too extreme assumption. So therefore, probably the sensible discussion is which is better, you know, direct representation but with some subjectivity, or you know, indirect representation.
One of the things which came out from the user thing is that they clearly told us they would prefer a direct representation in the financial statements of what's happening rather than proxy. Mm.
It's consistent with fair value measurement.
Okay, Philippe?
I wanted to ask Steph whether you had any direct discussions with banking regulators on the effect of this model in comparison to banking entities that would not choose to apply the DRM if it was a facultative, and the ones who don't hedge. And what about the comparability of the information for banking regulators? Did they have any views on that, or would they accept the financial statements directly for their purpose, or would they do some kind of restatements, filtering, or?
We had quite a bit of interaction with banking regulators. They have also commented, Philippe. They've written to us. I think we'll cover it in 4B. They're not very keen on a full scope of dynamic risk management, but they also think from the behavioralization aspect that that is something that needs to be considered.
Okay.
And also they themselves are looking at it from a regulatory perspective, so they know it's a real risk and very relevant.
Yes. But the question is, if one bank is hedging 50%, another one 70%, another one 30%, clearly the model could produce quite different information, which may be good for financial reporting, but how would they deal with that?
But there was clearly a concern from regulators in this situation that it would create too much P&L volatility, and therefore not stability, and therefore I think there was, based on my reading, not in favor of the dynamic risks of the full scope.
Of course not.
Well, how surprising.
Okay.
Anything else, or should we move to 4B?
Yeah, let's move to 4B.
This paper, 4B, summarized comments relating to five sections in the DP, namely Section 1, background and the introduction of the PRA, Section 2, overview, Section 5, scope, Section 3, the managed portfolio, and Section 9, alternative approach, PRA through OCI. First, let me summarize messages we received to the questions in the Section 1, 2, and 5 together, because these sections are closely related to each other. Many respondents commented that the DP comprehensively analyzed the limitations of current IFRS accounting requirements when risk management is dynamic. Accordingly, many respondents supported the necessity of the project, even though they also acknowledged that achieving alignment between financial reporting and DRM is a challenging task. Overall, many respondents suggested that there is a need for an accounting approach which addresses the difficulties arising in the application of hedge accounting when risk management is dynamic. This message about the purpose of the project is closely related to the issue of the scope of the application of the PRA. Many respondents preferred a scope focused on risk mitigation to a scope focused on DRM. This is because they believe it provides for the liberation of risk exposures to the extent that they offset fair value changes of derivatives through incorporating the aspects and techniques used in actual DRM, such as behavioralization and, say, bottom layer approach in the PRA. The views that underpin the preference to the scope focus on risk mitigation are summarized as follows. First, the objective of the project should be to address accounting mismatches between assets and liabilities that are accounted for at amortized cost and derivatives that are accounted for fair value through PL. Second, many banks usually manage current and future NII based on an accrual or cash flow view. This means that interest rate risk in the banking book assets and liabilities and effects of DRM on future NII should be shown in the profit or loss in future periods as they unfold over time. They say this view is consistent with IFRS 9, which requires both financial assets and liabilities to be accounted for at amortized cost for the majority of the banking book exposure, such as loans and deposits, regardless of the existence of the net open risk position between assets and liabilities. Third, for the purpose of conveying useful information about the holistic picture of interest rate risk on future NII, including the effects of both hedging and not hedging the net open risk positions, note disclosures are better placed than recognition and measurement. Although many of the respondents, especially banks, recognize that the PRA with the scope focused on risk mitigation is operationally more challenging than a scope focused on DRM, they say that the benefit exceeds the operational cost. Most respondents stated that the PRA with the scope focused on risk mitigation in conjunction with the hedge accounting requirements in IFRS 9 would provide a faithful representation of risk management. However, despite the fact that the issue of comparability that inevitably arises would pose a challenge, the staff observed that the issue was not fully addressed in comment letters. Some respondents expressed a concern that the optional application of the PRA would reduce comparability and mentioned the need to establish additional safeguards to avoid cherry picking that leads to earnings management. Reflecting conceptual and operational challenges of the PRA, some respondents, such as banks, included counter proposals in comment letters. There were basically two types of suggestions. The first type is that it would be more realistic approach for the board to amend fair value hedge accounting for portfolio hedge of interest rate in IAS 39, so-called macro fair value hedge accounting, to make departures from existing requirements and conceptual framework as limited as possible. The second type of suggestion is that ISB should explore approaches that could achieve the removal of accounting mismatches and operational feasibility at the same time. Suggestions included using cash flows of derivatives to calculate adjustment to offset fair value changes of derivatives and cost accounting of derivatives. The staff observed that these counter proposals are more in nature of directions to be considered and not fully developed models of accounting. Let me briefly mention messages from non-bank preparers. Insurance companies find the risk management activities to be dynamic in nature. Accordingly, they say that there is a need for accounting solution to address accounting mismatches between insurance liabilities, financial assets, and derivatives that could arise under the IFRS 4 Phase 2 project. Some non-financial entities such as utility and commodity companies expressed an interest in the project, including providing fact patterns in their comment letters to demonstrate how DRM was implemented in their sectors, say for commodity price risk. The staff would provide more analysis on this issue to the board in March in the context of other risks. Let me turn to the comment letter messages to section 3, such as behavioralization of core demand deposits and eligibility of pipeline transactions and the equity model. In general, there was a broad support among them for the PRA to be based on behavioralized rather than contractual cash flows. This is based on the view that as DRM is in many cases based on behavioralized cash flows rather than contractual cash flows, it achieves better alignment between DRM and financial reporting. At the same time, however, many respondents commented on the need for safeguards recognizing the risk inherent in behavioralization, such as the lack of comparability, earnings management, and auditability and enforceability. Many respondents are especially supportive that the PRA accepts core demand deposits. These reasons included, for instance, first, core demand deposits represent a significant part of banks' DRM. Given the sticky nature of core demand deposits, banks generally treat them as fixed interest rate funding. Since current hedge accounting requirements do not allow banks to represent this approach, a deviation between actual DRM and financial reporting has arisen, say, proxy hedge accounting. Second, core demand deposits are one of the most critical aspects in this project. Without it, the purpose of this project itself would be undermined. Third, as I mentioned in the context of users' recommendations, even though the inclusion of core demand deposits would lead to substantial judgment around assumptions such as expected maturity, the view under existing IFRS that they are deposits with overnight maturity is also very extreme. Again, even among respondents who support the inclusion of core demand deposits in the PRA, the need for appropriate safeguards is widely shared. For instance, disclosure of amounts of quad or non-core demand deposits and expected maturity are suggested. Mixed views were expressed about the inclusion of pipeline transactions and equity model book in the PRA. Respondents who currently include them in the DRM supported the inclusion in the PRA. In contrast, however, many other respondents have shown concerns because of the conflicts that arise with the conceptual framework. Finally, let me mention respondents' view on Section 9, the alternative approach PRA through OCI. Many disagreed with PRA through OCI, mainly because they agreed with the conceptual and practical difficulties considered in the DP, including the interaction with the assumption that derivatives should be accounted for at fair value through PL, and the treatment of internal derivatives. However, a limited number of respondents stated that the ISB should consider this alternative approach because showing the liberation of managed exposures in OCI would alleviate concerns that the PRA with a scope focus on DRM would increase volatility in profit or loss, while at the same time providing a holistic picture about the effects on DRM on future NII. Here, I want to discussion to the board. Thank you.
Sue?
I'll restrict myself to two observations. one is that the main takeaway I got from the summary, also reading comment letters and from the outreach, is that I think many think that we set out to solve the wrong problem. They think we should have been solving profit or loss volatility, and so therefore their responses reflect that. That's the question they want us to answer, and so that's what they want us to do. So I think in terms of next steps, and just because that's what they want doesn't mean that's what we should do, obviously, but it's obviously something we need to think about. And so I think the big next step problem we've got for this project is agreeing what problem we need to solve.
Yes.
Not an easy one. The only other observation I wanted to make was that many people, unsurprisingly, given they thought the problem we should be solving was profit or loss volatility, came back and said, we don't like this idea of dynamic scope. We like a risk mitigation scope because it's closer to achieving the offset that we're looking for. And some of them said, but okay, in disclosures will give you the picture that you were looking for more broadly. So they tried to offer a compromise to be fair to them. I think the concern I have, though, in the comments that we've got back, and particularly the comment that it's fine, you've tried to deal with operational complexity by the broader scope, but we can cope with the operational complexity of a risk mitigation focus, is that that didn't come with any concrete suggestions that I could see for how to do that, that I could see as being palatable for me. So the only suggestion that I saw that was more worked up than others is on page 18, which talks about this idea of identify the effect of the derivatives and then have an offsetting entry if you can show that there is a mitigation of risk. That to me seems, if I understand it correctly, to say as long as you can show there's risk mitigation, in effect, I can assume fully effective hedges. That's a big ask for the board. So and so I think that it's fair if people think the problem that we should be solving is P&L volatility, and if we ultimately were convinced of that, to go down that path. But I don't think we can be too comforted by people saying it's okay, we can deal with the complexity, because I don't know what they're opining on, because they haven't developed something that I can understand as a basis for development that they can base that assertion on. So I think it risks lulling us into a false sense of security that we could go down a path that works, that will satisfy them, that is based on the ideas we started with, which worries me.
Doug. Thank you. The difficulty of this project is because there is no common understanding of what the key performance indicators of the financial institutions. Actually, I had the words with the one of the analysts and who strongly support our project, said this is excellent because it can provide a net interest margin, and also it provides the risk profile of net interest rate risk. So that is what the management of the financial institution should deal with, and that our project make it very clear. So that's why they strongly support it. But on the other hand, the preparer side, they do not think the key performance indicator is in such a way. They think that net income is the key performance indicator. So there is a big difference between the analysts and preparers. And so even if we are proposing the same thing, and even if we are talking same thing, the outcome is quite different. So anyway, this project is difficult.
Thank you, Doug.
Very helpful, Doug.
Can I ask a question to Sue? So lastly, by the end of your speak, you know, about some of the ideas from them, should we ignore them totally or invite them to come to tell us?
Or let the hedge accounting people respond.
I don't think we will not ignore. We are not at all eager at the next steps. We will certainly consider them. Okay. But the point that Sue made was one of the suggestions, and let me also be very clear, these are not fully developed models, but they're directional suggestions, so it's not a model. I would just go on to add that if I have a derivative and I can show some kind of risk mitigation and put an equivalent counter entry, it is not complex, it's very simple. It's a very direct, I have the fair value delta of the derivative, my hedging adjustment is also the same. So the complexity also doesn't come in. But to answer your question, we will certainly look at what are the proposals and see which have legs to stand on. The question that is in my mind is that if it reduces risk, what does that mean? Doesn't go on to talk about that. It also looks at different kind of models where it's a cash flow type solution, but doesn't go into how do we recycle, what are the other issues. It will be integrated when we start looking at what could be the ways forward. We will certainly consider that.
Depends what we're solving for, I think.
Yeah. Any other comments or questions? No? Okay, thank you very much.
Very dynamic presentation.